is the Pedestrian Podcast.
I don't know. That's just what pedestrian, average, mediocre receivers do. What's up? What's up? My man Deion Sanders, we all right, huh? We all right? Yeah, we all right. We're going to go to the Super Bowl again, being all right.
The official podcast of the UK Seahawkers.
We are going to follow you. You lead us, okay? Like I told you before, you lead us to darkness, we will follow you.
Here are your hosts, Stuart Court.
I'm probably wrong. I am wrong on a hell of a lot of things.
And Adam Nathan.
And I think if that's the philosophy you have going into every game, more often than not, if you score more points, you'll win.
Go Hawks.
Welcome to the Pedestrian Podcast, once again refreshed, revitalized, but back at it after the Seahawks had the week off with their bye week. This week, myself, Stuart Court, is, as ever, joined by Mr. Adam Nathan. How are we, sir?
I'm good. To peel back the curtain, I am recording from my kitchen, my work kitchen today, and I realized that I took all the chairs out a couple of days ago, so I was very, very nearly going to have to be sitting on the bin. But sadly, I found something else to sit on, so I can avoid being a pawn in my own joke. So sad. I'm sure many people want to put me in the bin, but on the bin I shall not be today. Sad times.
Okay, cool. So this week, well, last week we went through all the 49ers chaos and looked at where the Seahawks stood. So with the team coming off the bye week, they head to the East Coast and at PA Philadelphia to play the Philadelphia Eagles, Carson Wentz, and all of the rest of it. When the schedule came out in April, the Eagles on paper in April compared to the Eagles in paper, 4 or 5 days out from the game, it's a different proposition. But it's still the Eagles, if that makes sense.
Yeah, you know, Eagles on the road is never going to be it's never going to be a cakewalk game. Even last week, you know, New England could barely move the ball against them, and they were just kind of fortunate that the Eagles outshat them on offense, to be honest. And it's not a game that I think any fan should be taking lightly. And to be honest, it's probably, you know, obviously it's a must-win game for us. But, you know, with the Cardinals not losing to San Francisco, you know, that gives them their little buffer. I probably think it's more must-not-lose for the Eagles than it is for us. So hopefully that doesn't translate itself on the field. But it wouldn't stun me if we got, like, the real best of Philly on Sunday, because they really cannot afford to lose this one.
Yeah, I think Brian Boelding has been pretty harsh on the Eagles and how predictable and one-track mind, especially on offense, they are. They're as average as average come when you look at it. From a record standpoint, they're 5-5. I think they're 15th or 16th in point differential. Their defense kind of is giving up yards, but it's sort of a similar story on the defensive side to our Seahawks, really, isn't it? But they're, as you say, in their home patch as December nears. It's a proposition you're not fully on board and completely 100% confident with it, is it?
No, I mean, they've got so much talent there. You know, people can joke about Wentz all they want, and, you know, the Wentz-Foles conundrum over the last few years has always been quite a fun sideshow to watch. But there's enough talent there, with the maybe possible exception of a real deep threat that you'd be overly worried about, that you'd think, you know, it definitely is. It's the hardest road game we've had so far, and that's certainly worth respecting.
Yeah.
Sorry, we played the Niners last week. Ignore that. It's the second hardest road game we've had so far.
I think especially as the juncture of the season as well, I think it definitely is. But the Eagles this week are doing everything by half, really, because their longest losing streak is one game and the longest winning streak is one game. So after Sunday, that is slightly worrying. That means we have to break a pattern and break the mold on the 2019 season. But the main point for this Eagles team this year has been since they won the Super Bowl, really, is how far and if the ceiling on Carson Wentz has fallen a little bit, but how far this team goes really does depend on his arm and getting the ball to a crop of receivers and tight ends, which is, again, with this team, a bit up and down in terms of one productivity and like league-wide reputation, isn't it?
Well, I've just been told by a pedestrian podcast insider, Jessamine McIntyre, that the Eagles have performed particularly well after losses. So, yeah, I think you're right. You just don't know what you're going to get from them. You know, they probably went into the season. Well, you looked at them going into the season. I think a lot of people thought they were maybe the pick for the NFC. You know, they were hugely strong on both lines. Wentz came into the year probably with a higher stock than he's got right now, but I don't think he's a bust by any stretch of the imagination. DeSean Jackson, it's amazing how important he looked like he was going to be for them. And like for a guy that's kind of farted around the league for a few years and come back to his home in Philly and really tore it up for the first game or couple of games. And they're probably, I think they're overly bemoaning his loss. Like, if you can't afford to lose someone like DeSean Jackson, it's kind of like the Chicago Bears and Cody Parkey thing. Like, if that's not the main issue in your team, even though you might think that's the only thing that maybe is the problem. But I don't know, like, I love these East Coast road games. Like, I just find them so much fun to watch, especially the 10 a.m. I know 10 a.m. is a nightmare for the players or whatever, but I don't know, there's something about those games in the daylight that I just love watching. And I'm just looking forward to this one a lot.
Yeah. Yeah, the thing with the Eagles is the few Eagles fans I do follow on Twitter seem to suggest that the team kind of pinned far too many of their 2019 off-season plans and season hopes on signing a 33-year-old receiver who has had a couple of years of injury problems, and he played three games. He had an immediate impact with a 50-yard touchdown. I think it was week one. I think one of the first plays of the season, first touchdowns of the season, was to DeSean Jackson. But then he has been missing since the end of September. So it's, I think one of the main things that fan base and that all the people who follow that team more intimately than we do, obviously, is that they put so many of their offensive plans on a guy who was 33 and kind of coming off not just what down year, a down couple of years with all the quarterback issues, in inverted commas, he had his last team in Tampa Bay. So I think that is their main point of contention. But outside of DeSean, Zach Ertz and Dallas Goedert, from who was one of my favourite tight ends when he came in the league a couple of years ago, that's a pretty tasty 1-2 punch at tight end after on a position we've talked about so often being a problem spot for this defense, no matter who lines up on the other side of the field to the tight ends, which is just one, let alone two, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, you put something about feast or famine in our WhatsApp group for something completely unrelated, I might add, about 20 minutes ago. But you go from playing a team without George Kittle to playing a team with these two tight ends, and it kind of feels a little bit like that for that kind of area of the field. And I would imagine that that's where the game is going to be won and lost for us defensively. You know, Jordan Howard is 50-50. Jay Ajayi, you'd be disappointed if he had a massive impact on this game. So I think it is going to be, it's going to come down to how do we cover the safety blankets for Wentz, who's always used tight ends as a real kind of, that it's always been his first read. You know, I think there was a time last year where before he got injured, they were talking about there was a far too much of an over-reliance on Zach Ertz for Wentz, and that was one of the reasons why when he went down and Foles came in, it kind of gave him a bit of a shot in the arm because they were using all the receivers as opposed to just the tight ends down the middle. So I think that's going to be really interesting to see how we combat that. And I don't know. I mean, Quandre Diggs is going to, you know, they talked about maybe him signing on as a nickel, but he played so well at safety last week. You didn't move him from that position, I wouldn't have thought. So I don't know what the situation is going to be there. Maybe Jamar Taylor for a real kind of comeback performance, but it's going to take a heck of an effort for him to do it. And you know, KJ's not looked great covering those tight ends this year again. It's always been probably his Achilles heel, and I would say that's a little bit of a worry.
Zach Ertz is the leading receiver for these Eagles by almost 300 yards. He's got 621, and Alshon Jeffrey, who's a doubt for Sunday, is second with 350. So the Ertz reliance, but it's reliance which he's paying off for the team, but he's only turned those yards into two touchdowns. But yeah, it's they're a team. It's match up if everything clicks, from which it did early on Sunday against the Patriots. And then the Patriots being the Patriots adjusted swiftly and shut most things down. I think that's the sort of thing which Brian Baldinger was bemoaning on his Monday morning tape study stuff on social media. But it's
they lost Lane Johnson at 10-0, didn't they?
Yeah,
they didn't score another point after that.
No. I mean, he's. I think was he concussed? I think he's in a concussion protocol. So nothing has shown up on that injury report because obviously they don't really declare that until later today. But also on that, Adam, is Darren Sproles has been placed on IR, and it sounds like his career is over. And that he's someone who was kind of sort of similar to Sean Jackson. His reliance at his age and at the time of his career was. It's something strange, but he, like Deshaun Jackson was before he got injured, he was being ridiculously productive for this team and for this offense, wasn't he, Darren Sproles?
Yeah, did he retire on Sunday?
That's what I picked up on, but on the internet, it says he's just been placed on IR, but I can't imagine he'll be back again, surely.
Because you're watching the game, and who was it doing the... Was it Buck and Aikman that were doing the commentary? I think it was.
No, it's Nance and Romo, wasn't it?
Of course it was, Nance and Romo. But the way they were talking about him, it was like, yeah, you know, what he's given so much to the game. It almost sounded like he'd retired on the sidelines. But I don't know.
He posted something Saturday night, Sunday morning on Instagram, like talking about hell of a ride and all that. So I think he has retired, but he's listed on their reserve injured list, so I'm not too sure. But yeah, he has been a massive part, and he is. I mean, it's slightly strange to say with all the weapons they've got and had in this team, but he is a big loss for this offense, isn't he? And they tried Boston Scott on Sunday against the Patriots to give that small dude running back spark, and the Patriots shut it down pretty handily, didn't they?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, 100%. They were. It was a strange game, that, really, wasn't it?
Yeah, it really was. Tom Brady just not looks... there's a conversation for later.
I think I did tweet out halfway through that game that Tom Brady looks at the fifth best quarterback playing in these evening games. And then Edelman threw a touchdown, and I actually relegated him to sixth best with only the Bengals quarterback. And even he looks slightly more sprightly than old Tommy Boy did, I have to say.
Yeah, the other player to watch you'd expect on the offensive side for the Philadelphia Eagles on Sunday is their rookie running back out of Penn State, Miles Sanders. He's had a very DK Metcalf season, I think, from looking from the outside. If any Eagles fans listen, they can correct me, which I'm pretty certain they'll be swift in doing if anyone do bother to listen. But he seems to have come along. He's still sub 400 yards. He only got two touchdowns on the season, one on the ground, one in the air. But he's kind of come along. Jordan Howard's kind of been the goal line guy. He missed game last week against the Patriots. But Miles Sanders is someone, if he is on that DK Metcalf ascension plan, he's going to be someone to watch and key in on if Howard and... If Howard can't go, isn't it on Sunday?
Yeah, he's looked really good. Trying to think of a comparison, but I can't. I imagine like if Matt Breida was at full health against us last week, that would have been kind of a similar-ish guy. I guess he almost looks like what you'd have hoped Penny was going to look like.
Someone
that can go through the tackles and also bounce outside and be shifty and have lateral speed, which kind of Penny hasn't shown any of that thus far, really.
No.
But he's looked really exciting, Sanders.
Yeah, he's also propping up my fantasy team without Aaron Jones last week, so it was mightily appreciated. Also, in my Sanders, I did have a bet, which I'm not a part of Team Never Gamble, but it was a 200-1 shot to win Rookie of the Year, and I kind of bounced in all on that, and that looks like a rather silly thing to have done. But this offense against this defense, obviously, we're coming off a performance for the ages from Clowney and Jarran Reed, kind of the first glimpse of 2018 Jarran Reed and all of the rest of it. Shaquille Griffin's playing at a pretty high level. I mean, if they carry that over a bye week where they all went home and went back to their alma maters, and I think Russell Wilson went down to Mexico. If they carry on what they did in Santa Clara, 13 days prior, it's that defense which showed up in Santa Clara has probably got enough for this offense in their current guys and in the current rut they're in, haven't they?
Oh, I mean, if they play like they did last week, they'll absolutely beat the piss out of them. Yeah. Let's be honest. I mean, they will absolutely destroy them. But I think it's going to be a tough ask to do that because, you know, that as we always say, like the Seahawks play up and down to their opponent. And I'm not saying that the Eagles necessarily down on talent, but the emotion of that game, Monday Night Football against your biggest rivals, 8-0, Richard Sherman, you know, that is like a Pete Carroll, like wet dream kind of game. Whereas this is going to be, you know, this is like a business trip. Whereas that was like, it felt like a playoff game, let's be honest. So,
yeah,
you know, I really hope that they can show that same energy as they did. I'm not expecting it because it would be foolish to expect, you know, performance of that level. But if they can play to 80% of that, you know, stop the run, which, you know, they're gonna sell out to do early on, and make Wentz beat you, preferably away from those tight ends, you'd have to hope that there's a good chance to get something done, especially against what is now a slightly more battered offensive line.
Yeah.
And let's just get after them.
Yeah, I mean, if Lane Johnson doesn't go, Doug is the Peterson has said that it will be Washington State 2 and their first round pick, which kind of the pick which kind of altered the course of the Houston Texans franchise, all the moves and shakes they've made since that. But Andre Dillard is set to make his first start if Lane Johnson fails all the concussion tests. Before we go on the defense, Adam, we talked a little bit last week. Obviously, it come down really to the kickers in Monday Night Football with Jason Myers nailing the ice kick and then the game-winning kick, and obviously their rookie young kicker flailing one down the tunnel. Jake Elliott is 13 for 13 on field goals, and he was kind of like back in 2013. You probably point to the Richard Sherman pick six against Houston for being the spark for that team. But that Jake Elliott, was it 65-yard kick in their Super Bowl year, was a spark for everything which has happened for the Eagles team a couple of years ago, wasn't it? And he's still consistent and as solid as like few kickers are in the NFL in 2019, isn't he?
Yeah, he's been a money kicker for ages. I mean, that play is one of my favourite ever. The Mexican announcer is just so funny. I think if we're going to segue from one bridge of the show to another, maybe I can stitch you up and you can try and find that clip because you've got nothing better to do today. Maybe have that as a little interlude from one segment to another of the show. Yeah, I mean, he's in that sweet spot that kind of Hauschka was at a time and Dan Bailey has been in the past where he doesn't look like he's going to miss. And so certainly when it comes down to the end of the game and the end of halves or whatever, that's going to be important from a defensive standpoint that, you know, you can't necessarily afford to punt the ball away with 2 minutes to go up to, because anything, you know, if they get 25, 30 yards on you, they're probably going to kick a field goal to win it. So I'm sure that may factor into the game plan. And if anything, it's almost better to be playing someone like that because you know what you're coming up against, as opposed to a willy won't he kind of guy like McLaughlin was last week. But look, I'm sure they're very well prepared to face a kicker.
Yeah.
And if the kicker is their best player on Sunday, I'll be pretty happy.
Yeah. On the defensive side for the Eagles, it seems to be a lot of names, but the star power is not exactly there looking from the outside looking in anyway. Brandon Graham leads the team with 6 sacks, and he got paid last offseason. Fletcher Cox is probably their best, the most consistent part of that defense, isn't he, really? In the middle of that defensive line, behind that, the linebackers don't really jump off the page, and then you got Malcolm Jenkins, the old man, back at safety, who's just playing at a consistent level. He's played for the better part of a decade in Philadelphia, isn't he? But Graham and Cox, in terms of the offensive line on Sunday, are going to be issues to try and contain. And Fletcher Cox is going to be, it's going to be Cox against Carson, isn't it, on Sunday, you'd expect?
Yeah, I mean, look, they've got amazing names on that line, and you certainly can't take it for granted. And you know, if last week was a great test for the offensive line and Jerry Hunt, this week isn't going to be a heck of a lot easier. Maybe slightly, but you know, they're in that team. You know, they're in that category of teams that you would consider to have an elite pass rush on paper. And it's going to be up to Solari and Schottenheimer to call stuff to stop it. They did a fantastic job in the main of limiting San Francisco's defensive line, if not stopping them altogether. So hopefully they can do the same.
Yeah, it does seem, just reading the names, like it's a defense in somewhat of a transition. You got young players like Derek Barnett, Josh Sweat, or Sweet. Then you got people like Brandon Graham, who's the other side of the 30, Malcolm Jenkins, who's 32. It's a strange bunch. You got Razu Douglas, who's a pretty young and ascending cornerback as well, who's started most of their games this season. So it's a defense which is going to provide a stern test for the Seahawks. Again, the same as, it's just a case of, if you repeat, even like you said, to 80% level they put out last Monday in Santa Clara, this should end up with the Seahawks with an extra win in the win column, shouldn't it?
Yeah, and that would almost guarantee the playoffs, I would say.
Yeah.
I think losing to Philly and Minnesota is probably the only, and the Rams, probably the only way that they're going to really balls up the whole playoff thing. So I think if they can get this win on Sunday, it kind of means they can go full steam ahead to just try and win the division with the safety blanket of probably having a wild card secured almost regardless what could go wrong from there.
Yeah, I mean the wild card could be a case where it's going to be a case where... It's probably going to be a case where the fifth seed is the place you should rather be this year. I mean, how's it? I mean, so it's Niners, Saints, Cowboys, and
Niners, Packers, or Packers. Vikings.
Yeah, so you're not really going to want to go to. Well, actually, it doesn't make any difference, does it? Actually, looking at that,
you wouldn't want to go to Green Bay, I'd say, because of the weather. You'd probably rather go to Dallas or New Orleans, just because you're playing in a dome.
And you
wouldn't want to face the Niners straight off, having played them in Week 17. If you can avoid it, I wouldn't have thought.
Yeah, although it's some weird gymnastics are happening if we play the Niners and we're still a wild card. I think that's gonna be slightly off and something has got a bit skew. Confidence score prediction, one to watch. In any order, Adam?
I am confident. I think the Seahawks are going to win 23-17. My one to watch is, I think DK Metcalf needs to bounce back. I don't think, he made a couple of nice catches in the open field against the Niners, but I was a bit disappointed with how little he could be really trusted in big moments. He dropped a couple.
He didn't
delight me, is what I would say, in that game. Not that that's his job to delight me personally, but it would be nice. So I think DK Metcalf is my one to watch on offense. And because I always and only watch him, I'm always watching Jay Clowney because he's just the most fun player that there ever did live.
I quite like the DK Metcalf one. I think Josh Gordon made the bigger play, especially the 2 third-down catches late on. That's the sort of plays you'd hope and expect from the player you actually put draft capital into. So I'll probably agree with you there. Defense, it's going to have to be Kendricks and a mix of Kendricks and KJ, I think, going against those two tight ends. I mean, Zach Ertz is going to be in blocking more than Goedert is, and Goedert is a proper red zone target, similar to like the Hernandez Gronk days of New England. But if those two can win their matchups more often than not, and you can kind of keep both of them at the end zone, obviously, but if you can keep them both into like 50-60 yards, I think it's been a pretty good day. Because then you're asking Nelson Aguilar to catch the ball. You're asking Arcega Whiteside, firstly, to be active and then to make an impact for the first time in his rookie year. So, yeah, I think if those two win more than they lose, then the Seahawks will be in good stead. I'm weirdly confident on... It's weird. My cover player going up to Sunderland again, I'm confident about that, which is a strange thing. And also, I'm confident about the Seahawks playing a 10 a.m. game on the East Coast and winning. I think I'm going to go 26-20 to the Seahawks. And if they do win that, obviously the 49ers play later that night. It's the game that was swapped out for the Seahawks from Sunday night. And now they play the Aaron Rodgers, Aaron Jones, Devontae Adams, and the Green Bay Packers. And if the Seahawks, I mean, it's like scoreboard pressure, isn't it? It's like when a cricket team amasses 450 in the first innings, it's a weird anomaly. It's something quite intangible, like momentum. The scoreboard pressure can do if we can get the win and have that be alongside them in the win-loss column before they play the first of many tough games they end the season with, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a very strange phenomenon surrounding Seahawk Twitter that because you know we scraped the win against the Niners that they are now rubbish for some reason, and like or like we broke the 49ers, which I saw an awful lot of on social media. You know, oh, the Seahawks broke another team because they're so tough. The Niners are really good.
Also, also the Cardinals are really good.
Yeah,
like Kyler Murray does not turn the ball over, or hasn't yet turned the ball over. I think he's turned two interceptions. They're a really good team. They didn't play the Arizona Cardinals. They played Kyler Murray. That's why it was a close game.
Yeah, and like good luck to the Seahawks when we play the Cardinals, because they've got the voodoo on us anyway in our building. And fuck knows what that game's going to look like with Kyler Murray running around like, you know, like Wee Man just on crack. Yeah, it's going to be really hard. But the Niners are a really good team. And, like, I don't understand this weird phenomenon that, like, fans can't praise other teams when they're good. Like, it's just watch the games. Just look at the tape. Yeah. They're good. And that's cool. And, you know, we beat them. And that was really cool. And hopefully we'll beat them to division, which will be triply cool. But, you know, they're not to be sniffed at. And, yeah, they're going into a really tough run of games. But I guarantee none of the teams that they're about to face are particularly delighted to face the 49ers.
No.
So it'd be great if the Packers can get a win this week. A tie might even be better for our kind of, if we have any aspirations of coming first in the whole conference, that would be extra sweet. But yeah, like I think ultimately whatever happens there, you're not going to be too gutted, but you'd probably because of general playoff seedings anyway. But you'd certainly rather that the Packers came out with a win if you could call it.
Yeah, I think the Seahawks Cardinals have got the 49ers at the best possible time because they didn't have their best player in George Kittle. That team looks a hell of a lot different without him. He kind of brings a weird spark, which again is somewhat intangible. But you mean Emmanuel Sanders could barely move on Sunday, and Debo Samuel steps up. If that continues to happen every week, that's what this Seahawks season is, the next man up kind of mantra. It's happening in San Francisco, but it's happening in positions where they don't really need it to happen, if that makes sense, because they are a proper team. I mean, there's the highlight of Larry Fitzgerald just leveling Nick Bosa, but they still got two Kyler Murray. He is ridiculous. They're going to be a problem, that team down on the desert. But you've got a lot of hope that the Packers win, but if the Packers beat the 49ers and the national media are going to insert AR-12 into MVP conversations as annoying as they already are, Adam.
Yeah, I mean, he has no right to be in that conversation. Let's make that quite clear. That conversation is, I think people really are massively sleeping on Dak Prescott, and I think it's a three-man conversation right now with Jackson, Wilson, and Prescott. But Rodgers has no place in there right now.
Distancia, dirección. Sí, señor. Sí, señor. Sí, señor. Sí, señor. Sí, señor. Jake Elliott de 61 y los Eagles ganan el juego. ¡Oh, qué patada! Jake Elliott de 61 y los Eagles con la victoria.
No, the Seahawks play Sunday night and then they flip around and play the week after on Monday night, which is just can't be doing with that so soon again, but we'll get to that next week. Do we have a quick spin in the bin on this truncated episode, Adam?
Let's do it.
First of all, this is an exciting time for our organization.
2017 Browns joined the 2008 Lions as the only teams to go 0-16.
Get in the bin.
Give me Josh Freeman, who was the 17th pick in the first round, over Cam Newton, who was the number one overall pick.
And the 2015 AP Most Valuable Player is Cam Newton.
Get in the bin.
Chip Kelly's an evolver, and he's a smart guy, and I think he's going to go to San Francisco and they're going to be a much more viable football franchise.
That the 49ers are expected to clean house and dismiss head coach Chip Kelly.
Get in the bin.
Yeah, while the Seahawks may have been off this past week, the news cycle from the sublime, impressive to the downright embarrassing and ridiculous was in full swing in the world of NFL. Adam, first off, four in the bin for you this week.
Well, we probably don't want to dabble in the Kaepernick stuff too much. But, you know, there are a lot of people that, I don't know, I come from a minority, and minorities, if they should do anything, it's kind of look after your own and kind of speak up for your own where possible. And the number of hot taking from certain people in the media, like Jason Whitlock and Stephen A. Smith, who I normally really like, kind of trying to fabricate something about Kaepernick when there's obviously an issue with this waiver that had legal issues, which you only need to look at a few of the posts done by legal experts to suggest it. I found that very unbecoming. And it kind of moves me on to my main one, which is just so many of the people who have to bring the alternative take to the Myles Garrett party. And basically there's just too many people that are employed to talk about the NFL is the crux of it, because if you're paid to do it, then people are expecting something interesting from you. But ultimately, this is a fairly open and shut case. Mason Rudolph might well be a dick. And
he
definitely is. And he may well have tried to take Garrett's helmet off, which is not right. But for me, no one would be calling for a suspension for Mason Rudolph if someone just picked Mason Rudolph or Garrett off Rudolph after trying to wriggle his helmet off and that was the end of it. Like, it just wouldn't be a thing. Myles Garrett took a hollowed out bowling ball and tried to whack Mason Rudolph on the head with it. Like, there is one real culprit here and the rest is kind of fluff. And the people that are trying to genuflect, like, well, you know, actually it's this and that. And what about Pouncey? Pouncey, yeah, if that happened to Russell Wilson, I would want Ifedi to do exactly the same to the guy that did it.
Yeah.
For me, the offensive lineman's job is to protect the quarterback at all times on the field, and Wilson wouldn't be dumb enough to go running back into the thing, which, you know, Rudolph was stupid to do that. And this is not to defend Mason Rudolph for being an idiot, because he objectively is that. But come on, I mean, let's look at the real issues here. Like, Myles Garrett has completely fucked the whole situation, and I was thinking it's probably going to cost him a Hall of Fame candidacy ever, regardless of how good his career is going to be.
Ray Lewis is in the Hall of Fame.
That's true. That is true, but I kind of feel like the on-field optics make a big difference.
Yeah, I guess.
You know, we've all talked about, you know, the domestic abuse stuff that's happened in the NFL, which is disgusting at all times. But people, like the ones that there's video of, they get the worse end of it, unfortunately, because we can all see it. I say unfortunately, not unfortunately. They deserve everything, and they all deserve the same punishment. But when there's video of it and we can see it, that has an impact on people. And there's going to be a video forever of Myles Garrett whacking Mason Rudolph on the head with a helmet. And I just wonder if that – it probably will be held against him forever.
Yeah.
Right,
yeah.
So?
Probably, but yeah, if Ray Lewis is anywhere, then you probably can get in that place, I think, at this point. On Kaepernick, it's just what it is with Kaepernick. Nothing really changed. If you don't understand why Kaepernick changed things and wanted things his way, then you haven't really been paying attention for the last 3 years. If anyone has a subscription to the Athletic, Tim Kawakami, I think his name is, the guy who covers the team down there, has wrote something amazing which kind of goes back to what happened in his final year in San Francisco and what the legacy of that and why that cannot be forgotten when talking about Kaepernick. Also on Kaepernick, if anyone wants a pretty good overview, it's weird to say these words, but go and listen and go and watch what Max Kellerman said opposite Stephen A. Smith on Monday, and he kind of nailed it, absolutely nailed it in every turn and every point on the entire Kaepernick stuff. On Myles Garrett, yeah, I mean, Mace Rudolph is just a massive
bellend.
Yeah, he's just an idiot. But his press conference is such a bad look after the thing. It's just, yeah. But also, the thing with Garrett, a few other people point out as well, like him doing that on the field, it's kind of tarnishing this and tarnishes this, tarnishes the reputation of the league and everything else. But you brought up the domestic violence stuff. They should put the same energy into whenever that happens again, because, I mean, it's horrible to say, but there is going to be another example of that. I think there even was. Yesterday, the Dolphins cut Mark Walton because he's been arrested for punching and pushing his, I think his girlfriend, pregnant. Who's five or 6 weeks pregnant, into a wall and everything. So it's already happened, but like, there's no mention of Mark Walton. There's no mention of a third, fourth choice running back for one of the worst teams in the league doing that, because it's just inconsistent. You need to put the same energy into just hounding Myles Garrett all the way and just tarnishing, as you said, probably putting it out, because if Peter King's still voting for the Hall of Fame 20 years, he's going to hold that against him. because that's what Peter King does. But you need to put the same energy into other things, which are far more culturally and everything, and set an example of more importance than that. But also, the one reason I think people, it is the reason people have tried to throw Mason Rudolph into his under the same bus is because of the tweets and social media interactions he has with a certain crop and group of people and a political party and a political stance, which is just—it's just ridiculous at every turn. It's ruining different things. You can't make certain jokes on certain platforms, but you can write about certain things. It's just inconsistencies of every aspect of life came through with that Myles Garrett thing. I think Lester's is kind of probably too broad. That is, it kind of showed up everything, every turn, everything that people can moan about everything that was kind of all shown up with all the reaction to that Myles Garrett thing, which was unbelievable to watch. It was awful, really. But the reaction was on every aspect slightly turned up and zooped up, and it would have, yeah. It's a proper whataboutism, but if Nick Bosa had done that to Larry Fitzgerald on Sunday after his block, it'd have been an interesting conversation to watch, wouldn't it? Yeah. My in the bin is more general. The league, you can't go back to the Azteca Stadium in Mexico because that pitch is just, it is an awful, awful injury waiting to happen. I mean, there was turf monsters on the first play. You need to. They've had the whole year because wasn't the game last year moved?
Yeah, it was moved back to Los Angeles because of the field.
Yeah, so they've had a whole year to prep for it. I mean, surely all the billion-dollar industry that the league is, they could send down a 3G pitch to Mexico, surely.
Well, presumably it's used as a football field first and foremost, so they probably can't do that.
But look at the Spurs. Obviously that's a bit different. The mechanisms are different, but you just put one on top, surely.
I'm not sure it's quite that simple because the grass field, the White Hart Lane, is retractable to reveal the 3G pitch underneath, and it's about it's like £300 million worth of technology that's gone into that to store it. So yeah, I don't think it's because the groundsman just rolls out the 3G for the game, unfortunately. I didn't watch the game, but yeah, it did sound like an absolute shit fest from Phil Rivers, who if we're doing good week, bad week. I think Rivers, he's getting close to the end. Is old man Phil, isn't he?
Yeah, but also at the same point, I think the same conversation really should be, as you alluded to earlier, Tom Brady does not look like Tom Brady. No. I mean, the offense he has is not the worst one. The weapons he has is not the worst set of weapons he's had in that team. I mean, a couple of years ago, with Danny Amendola, Julian Edelman, and Chris Hogan, he's now got Philip Dorsett. He had Josh Gordon. He's got Jacoby Myers, Sony Michel's a first round pick. He's got Mosa. He's still got Edelman, but that team's just not. James White, it just does not go. It struggled mightily on Sunday. So I think the conversations are interesting around Rivers and Brady. When obviously they've had slightly different careers, and one's probably more nailed on Hall of Fame than the other. Most definitely in one case, but yeah, the conversation is slightly interesting to watch because I think the tone could be somewhat similar. I think the thing with Rivers is that he talked about it all off season about maybe not returning for this season. I think that's kind of accelerating that chat with him. Yeah, good week, bad week. Anyone? Good week for anyone, Adam?
Good week for anyone. Brian Flores. Good week for him. I know they got beaten, but he has done a pretty remarkable job with an absolute group of hyenas on that roster. I mean, they make the film The Replacements with Keanu Reeves look a solid team. I mean, he has been given an awful hand, and fair play to him for getting a tune out of that team. And conversely, Zach Taylor, I mean, that is looking worse and worse for him as a guy that's trying to build something. Now, maybe they go and get like a Joe Burrow type quarterback that makes all the difference, but they look like they've given up on the coach in some areas, nearly as much as Dwayne Haskins' offensive line look like they've given up on him.
Oh,
because that was a tough watch, that clip on the sideline.
Yeah, they were basically laughing at him.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, I don't think I've got any good weeks, bad weeks for anyone, I don't think.
Fair enough.
Yeah, I mean, it's a bad week for NCAA not wanting to pay players after what happened to Tua in Alabama. I mean, the biggest star in college football the last 2-3 years has a what could have been a life-altering tens of million dollars costing injury. And it's kind of, yeah, their argument to not paying the players was not helped by that incident, as arbitrary as it is. But
I've got another little bin relating to that, if you wouldn't mind.
Okay. Yeah, go on.
Dr. Chow on Twitter.
So
this is an ex-doctor who now basically shares his views on any injury, going on by the video and having a look at what he sees. And it was a great system for a couple of years. He was answering questions. He used little halftime things like, that looks like this, that looks like that. He's now decided to monetize it with a website. And so anytime there's an injury, or a diagnosis, he links his own website and says, this stacks up with what we suggested here. And it's just, from something that was such like a handy tool for fans, has now just become such an awful little thing. And yeah, I think it's very much the bin for Chow, unfortunately.
Yeah, but if someone, I can't remember who it was, pointed me to his slightly alleged checkered past. So if you want to Google his name and look what certain things he's been up to and why he's an independent contractor, then please go ahead and do that. Yeah, he is annoying, but he is one of those things, I guess, at this point. I really haven't got any good weeks, bad weeks. I was trying to think of one while you're talking, but...
Could be a good week for me coming up, as we've discussed. We'll have to find out tomorrow, but we can allude more to that on next week's show.
It could be a good few weeks for the Pedestrian Podcast, quite selfishly, Adam. But
we got a listener and everything. It was great.
Yeah. But got interactions and the works. Elsewhere, in a few weeks, the Scottish meet for the fourth or fifth annual time is at the Record Factory in the city. All the information is on Facebook and the Twitter for the Panthers game on the same weekend in Newark in Nottinghamshire. Kieran's running another watch party at his local pub in the town. So again, all the information is on Facebook. Super Bowl night in Birmingham is occurring at O'Neill's on Broad Street. We also started the voting, which is all going to be on the membership email. So get in touch with Cedric if you haven't got one this time. But we've started to vote for the UK Seahawks team of the decade. The first group was the defensive line, and the four people are Brandon Mebane, Joanne Reed, Michael Bennett, and Cliff Averill, which kind of sounds pretty elementary, wasn't it? It's going to be those four.
Pretty much, and yeah, if people can stop voting for shit players, that would be handy.
Yeah, whoever voted for Puna Ford, I want to understand that.
That Puna Ford is even the worst one that was voted for, but Puna Ford's a very good player, and maybe in 10 years' time, or maybe the team of the half decade in 5 years' time, we can look at. But I think a little bit of a stretch going with the Puna Food Hive, or whatever, the Puna Hive, whatever it's called.
Puna Hive, that's a different Googling.
Don't Google that one. Well, not a word.
But if you want to get in touch with the podcast, you can through all the usual means and methods. Enjoy the game wherever you may watch it. Also with this game, the UK Eagles fans have teamed up with Sean and all the guys in Manchester and are going to have a joint viewing party somewhere in the city of Manchester on Sunday, which is Seahawks outnumber another set of fans, wouldn't it, Adam?
Well, the Seahawks are the only fans that ever brought a big group to London, so yes, you'd assume that would be the case.
Maybe go and look at the Bengals tweets from there last month. But yeah, until next time, enjoy the game, and this has been the Pedestrian Podcast.
Go Hawks!
The bye this late, though, we can feel it. You know that we're in a kind of the home stretch of the season, with 6 games left, and so it feels good to have it this late and just get a good break for the legs and all that coming back and the bumps and bruises and all. And as far as the self scouting and all of that, you know, the more information, the better for us in determining what's going on, and also in evaluating the opponents too. So it works in both directions.